Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have a very super-duper special guest that hopefully it's a foreign name that I can actually say without issues. Everyone say welcome to Benoit Van Lee. Hello, Benoit. How are you doing?
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me. And yeah, you nailed that one. Thank you very much.
Hooray. So you're from Belgium, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm Belgium meta is not very very large, so we consider ourselves just one meta, I suppose. But I'm from the east of the country, while Wout, which you had earlier on, was from the north, more Antwerp area, and Tim is from the complete west.
Okay.
So I started my War Machine journey not really in the same area as them, but I did grow to know them when I entered the national meta somewhat, going outside of my store and just forming a team with them and such.
Awesome. As way of introduction, is there anything else that you would like to say to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, I'm Benoit, obviously, as you've heard. I am mainly a Scorn player at the moment, but I've also, my War Machine faction is Mercenaries. I also dabble a little bit in Crucible Guard. Started in Mark II, I think just after Gargantuan's dropped, with Mercenaries at the time, but I wanted to get a Horus faction, so hopped over to Scorn and have been with them for quite a long time, but Mark III bumped me out a little bit on Scorn, but after the great Scorn errata, I'm really back on them, especially after Exalted CID. This is also my first miniatures game, which I don't know if that there's many guests that have been on here that have started with War Machine Hordes.
Yeah. So what ended up drawing you to War Machine and Hordes?
I had a demo game of 40k, I believe, a couple of years prior to starting with War Machine, but it was in one of those Games Workshop stores, and the owner was pretty pushy, and I don't know, it just didn't feel right. The game rules were also a little bit, I wasn't really convinced by the feel of the game, and the environment was kind of pushy, so that turned me off really quick. And in the local store, another game store just south of here stopped and sold all of their War Machine Horde stock, and everything, I suppose. But their War Machine Horde stock also went to our local store, and they had a big sale. And then a couple of my friends were like, "Hey, we should get into this War Machine Horde stuff. This is really cool." And yeah, we started with a bunch of people. Two of them are still playing. And yeah, that's awesome. That's my War Machine journey.
Awesome. I think it's probably true that a lot of people, it's not their first game, but it's always great for that to happen, obviously. Mm-hmm. So as a quick reminder to the listeners, if this is one of your first podcasts of the meta you're listening to, we're going to have a conversation for about 45 or 50 minutes in the main episode, and we are going to that episode will be free for everyone, and then we'll continue the conversation for another 45 or 50 minutes in the bonus episode, and that one will be available to people who support the Patreon, and we'll be going through questions on Patreon from our patrons, and we can dive in right now. So first one we have is from Zap Brannigan. He says, "I have a friend who's been away from the game for a while. What can I tell her to sell her on coming back to her Scorn?"
Well, if you like big, beefy beasties, both of the Scorn and the Minions variety, we've got what you want. There's actually a bunch of builds in Disciples of Agony with several different casters that are very interesting and cool looking on the table. Especially if you like Angels and Harbingers of Death, like the Void Archon or the Death Archon, to combine with them. Looks very cool on the table, plays really nice. And there's also obviously Exalted, which Terracotta Army always draws the eye. Really cool looking on the table. I'm talking about the Exalted, of course. And they also have a neat playstyle depending on your caster. I just really enjoy pushing my statues up the table, having my opponent be frustrated, not killing enough of them, bringing dudes back, and then raffle stomping what's left of the opponent's army. That's a couple of the big things that I can think of right now. The Death Archon and the Zakhar rework are a couple of the big things that happened more recently that have put some more and some new life into Scorn list building and just enjoyment of list building and modeling too, honestly. The Death Archons look really cool. There's some cool conversions out there already. Yeah, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I will say that I guess I usually say this about every time when we end up talking about Scorn, but just aesthetically, I think that the Immortal Exalted Army is one of the ones that definitely is one of the best looking armies in War Machine and definitely draws the eye to the table.
Especially if you got two Supreme Guardians, that just I wish I could just put two of them next to every entrance in my house or something.
That's awesome.
They are absolutely gorgeous.
All right. So next question is from Jacob. He says, Naresh, give me a list of 120 millimeter bases or beast heavy that you have seen do well.
Now there's a challenge. unfortunately, Naresh is in a pretty bad spot.
Any list that you've seen Naresh do well with?
I don't think that many players, Scorn or otherwise, remember that Naresh exists at all. When I see, for example, give me a list of the worst casters in the game, he's never mentioned unless I do it. Which is a bit of a shame because I really love the concept of him. Like, I once saw him described as the Scorn Buddha of Pain. But he just doesn't do very much of anything, really. So, I mean, you can build a list with three Gargantuans, still taking an Agonizer, Kriya, and Terrorizer as your rec options, and then maybe a couple of shifts, and it'll be fun. I don't know if it'll do well, but you can certainly push your big beasties and stomp around on the battlefield with him.
But do you have any suggestions on what an optimized Naresh list might look like, or ways that you might build it?
Beast heavy in general. There's a couple of routes you could go. I'm thinking about taking a bunch of bone swarms, a couple crock pots, which is the boil master and spirit cauldron, a couple death archons, trying to break up. Problem is, bone swarms are only speed 5, 1-inch melee, so rush is going to be a bit of a necessity. Only one initial melee attack, so. You're probably not going to get the alpha, so you're going to need feats defensively, rather, which feels bad on a feat like his. But then you've got a more of a brute spam style list, which I've seen other casters do well with, where you can take like a Wrestler, your Terrorizer, Agonizer, Kriya, Sadesh for some rush distributing, or Kriya Aura, or whatever animus you want. And just fill out the rest with brutes, maybe a couple archons, and then you've got a pretty tanky list with your brutes taking the brunt of the first hit, and then feeding and punching back really hard. The problem with that one is there's other casters in the faction that do it better than him. And lastly, you could go with more of a heavy War Beast style list, including a couple Warhawks, a couple of Roadhawks for that reach out and touch someone potential with their assault sprays. Obviously Terrorizer, who's really good with him, but he's really good with anybody. The thing is, the Terrorizer is the isn't Resh's character beast, gets boosted melee attack rolls with Resh. So mid late game, if you can get that little guy onto the opponent's caster, then you're gonna have a pretty okay shot at trying to take him down, depending on your opponent's caster's defensive stats at all. And I think that's mostly it for builds with Nresh. The most interesting thing he does is defeat. And I think his personal assassination, which people tend to bring up whenever he's brought up, which is he has Cyclone as one of his spells. But other than that, he's a speed 6, mat 7, 1-inch melee, power and strength up to 16 if you whip him 5 times. It's not really impressive. It's not going to kill all that very many casters, especially considering if you need to cyclone up and then charge something. It's not a really great game plan. Someone like Falseer could do it a lot better. Butcher 3, even in faction, Makeda 3 does it a lot better than him.
Okay. So next question from Jacob. He says, Zal 2 Exalted, is it still as awesome as it's always been? If not, what impacted him and the theme the most?
Unfortunately, I'm not the Zal 2 expert, I'm afraid. I think Jake Wilstrup or God, your American colleague, I forgot his name, Jason Watt. They would be the people to talk to about Zal 2. I don't have that much experience with him, but from what I've seen, he is still awesome. Carried a bit on the back of Exalted itself and the synergies that he provides with the list. There are a couple of releases lately that have that can impact his game negatively somewhat, like the Grimkin Archon Hellfire just removed from play one of your precious souls and immortals. Things like the Famrite Archon's been here for a little while, but it's dropped in popularity a little bit thanks to Flames going out of the meta a little bit lately. And the Death Archon, they can just stationary your important solos like Hakkar and Ancestral Guardian and things like that, which also kind of feels bad, but if they're sending in their Death Archon stationarying your solos or your dudes, you can usually clean them out pretty easily with Supreme or something if they don't have any other good targets, which usually is the case because of their 11-inch threats. They don't threat super far, and your opponent is most likely wise to their threat ranges by now.
Okay, so... the next question from Jacob, he says, bronze backs, what role do they play in Scorn, and how do you get the most work out of them?
The most ideal place for me, at least, would be as a sort of minimum battle group, backup heavy. Something like taking, for example, a Masters of War list where you're taking a bunch of melee infantry. And your hard-hitting pieces are usually like the Citrati or the Swordsman with their attachment, but once all of that gets thinned out and you get to the mid-late game, you still have a bronze back just countercharging or roaming around, still being a viable threat. That's the most use that I've been able to get out of him. Unfortunately, he's a little too costly for a Disciples of Agni list, where 17 points really eats into your budget for a speed 4 heavy that really needs a lot of work to get up the table. But if you've got an army of, say, Exalted Warriors or a couple battle engines, and you've got a bronze back behind that one, once they get through the army or gets to the middle of the game, the bronze back can really pull its weight in gold.
The next question from Jacob, he says, are you excited about the Death Archon in Scorn? What ideas do you have for it in lists?
Absolutely. Most of the ideas that I have at the moment are in Disciples of Agony, but that's because I'm on a bit of a Zagar kick at the moment. But I'm trying to figure out if Xerxes 2 would work well with them too, because Xerxes 2 can deliver a fantastic alpha, but the problem with Xerxes 2 is after the alpha, if you if you haven't alphaed hard enough, then your army usually evaporates fairly quickly after that. And I'm hoping with the combination of Agonizer and Death Archon that a post-alpha strike Xerxes 2 might still hold water until the mid to late game. For Zakhar that I mentioned just earlier, just synergizes super well with his feet, and even outside of feet turns, getting a 4-point swing on your melee line is fantastic to keep fragile gargantuans like the Hydra alive. That's some of the things that I'm experimenting with right now. But I've also thought about including a Death Archon in something like Masters of War, where a Satrati brick supported by both a Death Archon and an Agonizer could be obnoxious to get to try and clear out of a zone when they're also spell warded. Though there's still push feats and all that. Death Archon and Agonizer bring him up to an armor 24 after a shield wall, which sounds pretty good and pretty obnoxious, and that's before any feats or other spells that you might have to put on them. That's something I've been toying with in my mind. Unfortunately, I don't see a lot of use for them in Winds of Death, because, well, you can only take one, and points are a bit tight in that list, too. So yeah, that's Death Archons for me.
Awesome, okay. His next question is, in Exalted lists, is Hakkar an auto-include? Why or why not?
Absolutely. He's the best requisition option you can get in that theme. Other than being a veteran leader for Exalted, which also includes the Supreme Guardians and Zal 2, if you're playing Zal 2, he is also just a Mat 9 character model, which can unjam your lines from things like angels or what have you pretty efficiently with two swords as well. Even a combo strike at power 18, power 20 with stone strength can put a serious dent in a heavy that's gumming up your lines. So yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't include Hakkar. He can also be pretty tanky with if he's got a couple souls on him, getting to base armor 21, is not ignored by anything, and that's before counting an Agonizer or a Force Aura bubble.
And final question from Jacob: Extreme Gladiator, 80mm bases. Is this an untapped possibility for War Machine and Hordes in light of Warcaster, in your opinion?
Overhang and Scorn. Bit of a problem. I don't know if you've ever had to position a model next to in front of a mammoth or anything, but yeah. But well, Extreme Gladiator. I don't know. It's I think introducing 80mm bases in War Machine right now is going to create a lot more problems than it might sound. So I'm going to go for no.
Okay. So next is another question from Zap Brannigan. He says, does Exalted need to be included in your pairing? If yes, what does it cover that other themes do not? If no, what covers the same matchups as Exalted?
That's a really good question. I've thought about this for a little bit prior to Zap Brannigan asking this question. And I do think that if you're going for a competitive event or something like that, then I do think Exalted is pretty much a must in your pairing. One of the things that I found that Exalted does very well is to force a more honest matchup. If Movable Object says that control lists or control effects, push, knockdown, things like that, just don't work. And the list just says, no, you have to engage me on quote-unquote honest terms. You're going to have to kill me or jam me up or things like that. Which Scorn has always struggled with until the advent of Exalted, actually. I always had a lot of trouble playing into Kruger 2, for example, but now with Exalted, it seems like it's a more doable matchup. It's not just Kruger 2, it's also just in general to the broader game. Being able to force an honest engagement is really a big advantage, I think, in the game right now, where, you know, the control effects can just completely skew a game in your opponent's favor. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Sorry, were you going to say something else?
Yeah, sorry. So I was going to go ahead on Zap's next question on what does it cover that other teams do not.
Yeah.
It's also not a living theme, mostly, which lately there have been a lot of things that punish living models, such as the Death Arcanist Mortal Fear or Bloodthirst, things like that. That doesn't work on the Walking Statue Army, which, again, plays into the forcing your opponent to play quote-unquote fair. There's also, for Zaltu specifically, there's also the out for spell assassination at any given time if your opponent decides to take away a lot of your statues. I don't think I can add a lot more to that question at the moment.
Okay. So next question is from Llama Drama. He says, what are your thoughts on Masters of War? I never liked how limiting the options are in Exalted. Do you feel like immovable object is the only reason as to why Exalted is as strong a theme as it is?
Thoughts on Masters of War, it's a theme full of living models, aside from the Supreme Guardian, most likely. And in general, there seems to be a bit of a punishment on both single wound infantry and just living models in general at the moment. So I think it's a little bit disfavored at the moment. The theme benefit is quite strong, though. Just an optional takedown can be really key in some matchups. The thing is, the cataphracts are such low quality models at the moment that they're oftentimes just not worth taking, aside from the earlier mentioned Citrati. And in my opinion, the only Praetorian models that are worth including are the Swordsmen, maybe the Legends, but you're going to have to find 8 points. The Ferox have seen their time in the sun, but I don't know if they've got what it takes to play in the current meta. You're going to need some great damage and to hit buffs in order to really enable the Ferox. I can see something like Xerxes 1 maybe making it work on his feet turn, but I think you're always better off just trying to include an Exalted list in your pairing instead of a Masters of War pairing, unless your meta is really heavy on things that suffer from remove from play, or just heavy tough that you're having trouble with. But, well, if you're having trouble with tough, then you can also include a couple of Void Archons in your Exalted list and then solve that problem that way. I do agree on the limited options in Exalted, though. There's only one unit, the list basically rides itself, Exalted, right? So you take a couple units of Immortals, take one or two Supreme Guardians, your rec options are spoken for in Hakkar and Cecil Guardian, and maybe some Novitius or Vessels or something like that. But the models in Masters of War are currently not really up to the current meta in quality if you're going to go competitive with it. And yeah, immovable object is a big part of the reason why Exalted is such a strong theme force. Certainly not the only reason. There's also the powerful recursion of magic weapons on just about every model, so you incidentally solve a couple of other problems for incorporeal and such. Things like being able to get to an obnoxious defense and armor combination with the Advocate and spending a soul for Grave Mists, and that's before any caster-relevant buffs. So there's a lot of things that Exalted does, other than movable objects, to make it a good theme in itself.
Okay, so there's fair number of additional questions from Llama. He says, what are your top three casters? What I mean for this top three is name one you feel is very strong, one you feel personally is strong, but perhaps more of a dark horse choice. And what is a caster you really enjoy but could use some buffs slash changes?
Well, the last one, you could probably fill in half the roster for that one. But let's see. I'm going to start at the top. So one I feel is very strong is Reshef. I have taken him a lot in Exalted over the past couple of years, and I think he's probably on par with Zaltu in terms of strength, but I think it's more spread out over the entire game instead of focused in on the feed turn being hardy and maybe getting a spell assassination off. I think Reshef is plays more into great attrition style with enforcing the hey, you need to play fair against me with castigates, which castigate says that you can't arc spells in his control area, and enemy war beasts can't force for the animi, which can both are a bit situational, but when they come up, it can be devastating. And he's got an armor fixer, he's got a defense fixer, he's got carnivore for move and play, and another hit fixer, and he can scalp louts like nobody's business, because every warrior model in your army is an arc node, which is really hard to stop unless you've got effects that specifically call out stopping arc noding within their command or control or something like that. So that's one I feel personally is really strong. One that I feel is really strong, but perhaps more of a dark horse. This one I find a little bit difficult. I'm waffling between Xerxes 2 or, well, I want to say Morgul 3, but the problem is I think Morgul 3 is the meta has passed Morgul 3 basically. I think he would have been a great dark horse caster in the Tharm time. When they were popular, there were a bunch of other themes and lists at that time that were popular that would have been greatly countered by Morgul III. He's also really good in a mirror match if you're going up against Exalted, for example. But I think Xerxes II would be my answer for this one. Like I said, he can deliver an amazing Alpha Strike. The problem with Xerxes II is, he likes to build in Cycles of Agony, and you really need to plan for that post-feed turn. When you've engaged your opponent's army, if you have not taken most of your opponent's army on an alpha, you're most likely going to melt to what's left. But I'm trying out the Death Archon at the moment and seeing if he can't skew that one in your favor. That's it for that one, and the third one was what is a caster you really enjoy but could use some buffs slash changes? Actually, I might go back a little bit on the previous question. Xerxes 2 also ties with Mordekaiser, but I feel like Mordekaiser could use a couple of changes, like He plays a really great attrition game, which if you're playing into Grimkin, that's not gonna be, yeah, you're not gonna recur against the Phalanx Archons or things like Phanomite Archons or things like that. But all other matchups, he can do the attrition game fairly well. I find it difficult to find things what I would change with him, other than doing maybe kind of a big overhaul. I'd like to have him, like, some sort of speed buff on him for troops, and maybe a two-hit buff. I think that Mordekaiser would be the one I would choose to have some changes on him. Although, like I said earlier, I think you could point at half the roster of Scorn Warlocks, and they all of them could use some changes.
He after that, he kind of gives some of his top three. He says, Makita 3 will always be up there. Dark Horse, I'll go with either Morgul 2, one of my personal favorites, of or Zakar. And then the one that he loves or wishes is better is Hexorus 2. Do you have any comments on any of those, Catherine?
Yeah, Morgul 2 is certainly great Dark Horse. The thing is, with the advent of Archons and their immunity to blind, his stock has dropped a little bit. It was always a little bit difficult to get the full work out of his feet, as I suspect many Sorcia 1 players will can attest to. When you need line of sight to your opponent's army, if there's a big building or a forest or the like in the middle of the table blocking line of sight to half your opponent's army, then, well, so it doesn't really feel good. He's got mortality and he's got a great personal threat, so he's certainly in the top, probably top, I want to say top five, but I'm not sure if he breaks top five, but he's at least a B tier caster for Scorn. Zekar is absolutely an S tier caster on the same level of Zaltu for Scorn. I will say that now. And for Makita 3, I've tried Makita 3 a bunch, and for some reason I cannot get her to click for me. I've been too aggressive with her, I've been not aggressive enough with her, and for some reason it always seems like my opponent has the exact thing that they need to turn off my list, whether it be a rebuke on Makita's units, or a dispel for getting rid of Bulwark, or things like that. For some reason, she's never really clicked for me. I don't know if that's just me, or maybe I got into some bad matchups lately with Makita 3. And for Hexorus 2, I really want to love Hexorus, the character in general. I mean, the fluff in his buddy cop thing with Gearshield is fantastic. And I've been trying to get Hexorus 2 to work for a while now. I've got a great little conversion where I gave him a guitar because he's got that pose. But he's just not doing enough. His feet's really weird, where he can only go up to his fury in resources that you steal. There's some abilities that you can see where the developers wanted to go with him, like stealing life force from your opponent to fuel his own, but just doesn't really do enough. I might be overstating things there, but I think they went far enough in enforcing his own troops with stealing the your opponents. So yeah, I would also love some changes to Hexorus too. I've thought a lot about what I would change on different warlocks or models in the faction, and Naresh and him and the Savage are some of the first ones I thought of when trying to quote unquote fix them. But I am neither a game designer nor a very smart man, so I'll leave the fixing of them to much more capable developers.
All right, so the next question is from Mistwalker. And first off, let's talk about, if you were to go to a tournament tomorrow, what would your pairing look like?
For me, it's going to be Reshef Exalted, with double Immortals, double Supreme. And I've got a Zekar list that's rocking a Hydra, and four Brutes, a couple Death Archons, and a bunch of support. That would be my pair at the moment.
Okay. Can you dive a little bit deeper on each of those lists?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the Reshef lists. Like I said, those lists, the Exalted lists, usually build themselves. It's just a matter of, do you want to go one Supreme or double Supreme, one or an Archon, or three units of Immortals, things like that. For me, I took Battle Group of an Agonizer, Kree, and Bronzeback. And here, the Bronzeback question from earlier comes in again, where you've got the triple threat of two Supreme Guardians, which are the big targets, but there's also a Bronzeback just walking around, causing trouble, countercharging, putting up its Animus, and being obnoxious to remove under an Agonizer. So that's three big hardy targets that your opponent has to deal with. Hekar, one Ancestral Guardian, one Abadanda Keeper, two Novitiates. I've got a Hermit in there at the moment. But those last 5 points can be filled in with whatever you want. I've put in Eilish 1 for keeping away debuffs from my stuff. And Puppet Master, I've put in things like Slugwork or Throlg even at times, just to experiment some. But yeah, this list is one that's probably going to be a main drop, unless my opponent is bringing heavy shooting tools, and in steps Zekar. The thing is, Reshef can skew numbers in such a way that attrition is going to usually play into my favor unless I make some critical mistakes and expose Reshef himself. And usually I can grind the game down. Also depending on scenario, of course, because King of the Hill and Anarchy, to a lesser extent, are a bit rough to spread out on. Next to that, we've got Zekar and my current list. Hold on, let me just pull it up. Here it is. I've got Zekar in his battle group. He's got Optimus Markef attached to him. He's got a Desert Hydra, an Agonizer, the Terrorizer, four Brutes, one Shaman. Then I've got Double Taskmaster for my other rec option, the Hermits, two Death Archons, and Beast Handlers. And the idea here is to leverage the Hydra's Animus to force your opponent to come closer into what should be my threat ranges. Because with Rush and Alpha Hunter, Zekar's Hydra can threat 14 in melee, and up to 17 with its sprays. The Brutes are just some really good shield guards, really good roadblocks. They require a lot more attention than 8 points to actually remove, and if you give them a chance, they can and will mess something up. Not too long ago, I played a game into a Legion player, for example. I was able to dispel Dragon's Blood on their Archangel with Zekar himself, and a couple of Brutes were able to take it down with Mortality. So those guys can hit above their weight class, but require a lot to bring down, especially counting Zekar's feats. Agonizer and Death Archon, even without Zekar's feats, Death Archon and Agonizer are usually enough to stop a big thing trying to kill a Brute, just because of set defense and their stat profile being 13-18, unless you ignore a shield. Also, one thing to note on those Cyclops Brutes is that the intuition rule can be really obnoxious. Intuition says that when an enemy model targets this model with an attack, and the attack results in a hit, you can immediately force this model to cause the enemy model to reroll the attack roll. So the fact that Zekar can run his beast for free means that you have free fury to play with to make your opponent reroll. And one of the things that most opponents and some Scorn players don't seem to realize is that you can intuition the same roll multiple times. It's just that they have a limit of free fury on them, so if you really want to avoid that charge attack hitting, you can use up free fury to force the Brutes to reroll the attack roll.
Okay, so Mistwalker gives you a lineup where you're going through a four-round event and has each round matchup for you and is curious what you're dropping and what kind of your thought process is behind it. So round one, you get paired up versus Menoth. Your opponent has Sirenia, Faithful Masses, and Vlad III, all the pretty horses. What are you likely looking to play from your matchup in that scenario?
It's going to depend a little bit on the scenario. I could expect, if it's like King of the Hill, that the Protector player might want to drop Flat 3, because that list, as I understand it, can spread out pretty well. But in general, I would still go with Reshef Exalted, because he's got the outputs to actually try and chew through both of those lists. The thing to watch out for there is to I'm expecting the Sirenia list as a drop, by the way. So the main thing that can threaten you is the battle group. like the Mad Archons and the Champions of the Wall can put a dent in your Supremes, but they're unlikely to kill it. So I usually give them some mortals to play with and try and go for the battle group models that can actually kill or one round Supreme Guardians and Bronzebacks. And yeah, my feet can certainly leverage some great defense and armor swings to bring their sets down, bring their stuff down. That's it for first round, I think.
Okay, so second round, you're matched up versus Retribution. They're playing Falseer in Defenders and Gareth II in Dawn Guard.
This is a matchup that I dread, honestly, because Retribution is one of the factions that I struggle with the most. Most likely, I'd be bringing Zakhar, even though there's Falseer that can easily one round the Hydra without breaking any sweat. The Reshef list I don't feel like has a staying power. It also depends a little bit on how many tridents are in that pair. If it's just one trident in every list, then I think I would rather drop Reshef. But if it's two tridents in one of those lists, I don't think you can risk dropping your Exalted, unless you're maybe playing Zaltu. Zaltu could try and force his way with the feats through all of that firepower. But in general, I'd drop Zekar and try to... Zekar also has a pretty key spell, well, pretty cute spell, I should say, Dead Weight. If you kill a living or undead model with it, you can choose another model within 2 inches of it to sacrifice its movement or action, which I have used to great effect on Tridents before. I haven't played against Falseer before, but that's something that the Retribution player should always be mindful of. And Mortality can let me just trade up or trade evenly a couple Brutes for a Trident, maybe. And try and make it as difficult as possible for Falseer to get on the Hydra, get some Death Archon and Agonizer action going, and try to feed aggressively.
Okay, so for round three, he has Signar, Striker 1, Flames in the Darkness, and Haley 2, Heavy Metal.
I think this is pretty much a no-brainer. I would drop Reshef in here. Haley 2 can just turn my boots around and, you know, make them fairly cheap paperweights, I suppose, or just gun them down like nobody's business, even with my Desert Hydra Animus. But Reshef... Just turns that game off in one part due to Castigates, no arcing on my control, and he also has a pretty okay game into Flames. It also depends a little bit on the number of shots that the Famrite Archons roll, but on average you should barely kill one Famrite Archon with two fully boosted Sunder Spirits. So if you can get the drop on them when they're not in cover or concealment or something like that, then you should probably try and go for one of those Famrite Archons. Double boosted Sunder Spirit should do it, two of them on average. And then you can play the long game. Recur your immortals, kill their stuff, wait out feats, or maybe even if they're cocky enough, and put their colossal or whatever it is forward with Arcane Shield and such. Put a blood mark on it, feed on it, hermit it, and then your Supreme Guardian is still hitting at a quote unquote Weapon Master. With Science Importance, Power and Strength 24, I want to say. Did I math that right? No, 26 even. Especially if you have two of them, you'd still have a decent chance of taking out one of those blockaders or what have you, that those are popular right now in the Striker 1 lists. And yeah, I mean, Precursors, even if you're shield walling under Striker 1's feet, they're not going to survive a treasure from a Supreme Guardian, so depending on their positioning, that should be okay as well. So yeah, I feel fairly confident-ish into both of those with Rochef.
All right, and then you've made it to the finals. You're facing Circle, and they have Kruger 2 Secret Masters and Wormwood Bones.
This is another one for Rochef, because again, he forces an honest game, and if there's anything that Circle hates, it's an honest game. Turning off arcing, turning off pushing and telekinesis and things like that, and just being able to put yourself in a zone and saying, "No, I'm going to stay here." That's going to be really key in that matchup. Plus, you can with your excellent spot removal from just running a guy and arcing through him, you can still take out some of the key pieces like Chuck Dogwood or Gallows Grows or things like that. Well, you don't really need to kill Gallows Grows all that much with Castigate, but still, you can kill Cassius, or try and kill him at least.
Okay, well, we're going to pause there, and that's going to be our first episode. As always, check out discountgamesinc.com for your gaming items, and check out Muzon Minis for your accessories and tokens and everything that makes your game that much better to play. And if you're not yet subscribed on Patreon, head over there and you will get a chance to listen to our bonus episodes and support the podcast and make this all possible. Thank you to everyone who does back the podcast on Patreon. And if you've been a previous patron and haven't updated your status to one of the two new monthly programs or tiers, then be sure you get that done so that you can keep accessing all the content. And to wrap things up, Benoit, want to thank you for sharing your time, sharing your knowledge with us. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. It's an absolute pleasure and an honor. And yeah, support the meta.
Benoit is someone who's active in our Discord and active with the podcast, so we definitely appreciate that.